Informed Dissent, the intersection of healthcare and politics, with Dr. Jeff Barkey, board-certified primary care physician, and Dr. Mark McDonald, board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist.
Welcome to another great episode of Informed Dissent. Mark, great to be with you. I know you've been traveling for a while, and great to be back on the air with you.
I am back.
Very excited to have a special guest, somebody I've gotten to know over the last year or so during the campaign season. He resides in the great north of California, and that's Assemblyman Kevin Kiley. Kevin Kiley is a warrior on the floor of the Assembly in California, and he is running for Congress, so he will be on your ballot if you live up in Northern California, running for Congress. And I think he's got a great chance, and we look forward, Kevin, to you doing the same fight that you did in California, but this time in Washington, D.C. So welcome to Informed Dissent.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
And before I forget, for those of you wanting more information, I think it's electkevinkiley.com, electkevinkiley.com. Last name spelled K-I-L-E-Y. Do I have your website right?
You got it.
Awesome. So you just tweeted this today, and tell me what your thoughts are. Biden's 87,000 IRS agents reminds me of how Newsom spent $21 million on new staff to audit small businesses during the lockdowns. There is simply no shame. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I do think it's shameless, and it just goes to show you sort of the mentality of a Joe Biden or a Gavin Newsom or the progressive left, which is that they seek to use the powers of government to harass and to regulate, to audit, to bully private citizens to their own advantage. And so, in the thick of the COVID lockdowns, Gavin Newsom decided this was a good time to pounce on all of the people who were supposedly not, following AB 5, this terrible law that banned independent contracting. So they unleashed all these people, spent $21 million on it, even used personnel from the EDD that could have been processing unemployment claims, and sent them out to try to slap, crippling fines on small businesses that weren't even allowed to be open at that time. And in the same vein, here we have small businesses struggling across the country with workforce issues, with inflation, and Joe Biden and Pelosi and, Schumer's Congress decide this is the time that we want to have, an army of new IRS agents to go around harassing people. It really is quite revealing.
You know, it's funny. I'm not very good with math. I'm a doctor, right? But I'm thinking of applying to get one of those 87,000 IRS jobs. I hear they pay well and has some pretty good job security. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So might be. I think you're doing pretty well, and you're expanding portfolio of vocations, Jeff. But maybe you could add that to the list.
Absolutely. So, Kevin, who in their right mind would want to work in Congress and in the federal government? Why do you want to do this?
Well, it's can't be any worse than California, right? I mean, and I say that with something of a grain of salt, but there's truth to it in that, in California, I've been part of the super minority. We've got less than 1/4 the members of the legislature. The odds are very steep when it comes to getting any meaningful legislation advance, any sort of reforms, anything that has any sort of good government orientation to it. I think I've been able to accomplish quite a bit in that role. But in Congress, especially at this moment, I think that there's a potential to have a really large impact, being part of a new majority that can really put the brakes on this train wreck that we see happening in D.C. And it's really kind of like deja vu when you look at what the Biden administration has done. It's everything that has gone wrong in California. They're now just making it national. And so having been living and fighting against the insanity here in California, I think that's actually pretty darn good training for what we're going to have to deal with in D.C.
Yeah, no doubt. I agree with you. So you're going to be going from being in the minority party to very likely being in the majority party. And, obviously as a freshman congressman, I'm not sure what influence you're going to have. But what are your goals when you get to Washington, D.C. and in Congress?
Well, I think the first thing is we just need to do sort of damage control and make sure that the Biden administration, does not continue to take us down this disastrous road they have been, basically the California path, which is what they're trying to do, which is what Newsom even said. He said California is a model for the nation. He told Biden, look at our state. That's the roadmap. Look at our state's progressivism. That's the roadmap to success for your administration. Then he hired all these California people from the Newsom administration to run the government in D.C. So I think that activating the full investigatory oversight powers of the Congress in order to rein in the Biden administration is key, but we also need to get moving on a proactive agenda that's actually going to right the ship. And, you know, obviously that starts with the economy, getting inflation under control, getting this record spending under control, getting our workforce actually, activated again so that small businesses can operate. And, there are a whole host of other issues we need serious action on, immigration, crime, and others, but I think that's where we need to start.
Now, given a choice, what types of investigations would you like to launch when you get to DC?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that, could be investigated. I saw that Kevin McCarthy just put out a tweet today related to this raid that just happened and said that we need to get to the bottom of the politicization of the Justice Department. So maybe that's one of the things that he's looking at. But I sort of use it more in the sense of oversight. Like, we need to, look at things like what's been going on at the IRS and all of the ways in which the Biden administration and has been, using the bureaucracy in order to, put a stranglehold on the economy and small businesses. More broadly, I think that when the legislative front, we could at least make sure that terrible bills like this so-called Inflation Reduction Act and these Build Back Better bills, that they don't continue going down this path. And we've run up $6 trillion in deficits over just the last 2 years. We're just printing money, and then they act like they're shocked when suddenly we have historic inflation.
Yeah, it's interesting. Here you work in the legislature, and Gavin Newsom is our governor, and presumably he's going to be running for president. So wouldn't that be ironic if you move from Sacramento to D.C. and now you've got a President Newsom? I don't think that'll ever happen, but that would certainly be pretty crazy.
It would be. And indeed, there's a lot of talk now that he would be the Democrat nominee in the increasingly likely scenario that Joe Biden, doesn't run again. I think that it's a crazy notion. I think that when you ruin a state the way he has, the idea that somehow you're going to, make a case that you should lead the country is completely crazy. I think that when he gets the scrutiny that a national campaign involves, which he's never really had in California, he'll fall apart pretty quickly. But it really does highlight, in a sense, just how weak the Democrat bench is. That it's like, that if they had anyone out there who was a halfway decent prospect, no one would be talking about Gavin Newsom. So it's not like he's done anything, particularly brilliant to get himself into the conversation. It's just like a matter of default.
But Kevin, he has great hair.
He does have great hair.
There is that.
Mark, it's funny on media, not uncommonly, I'm asked to comment about what is obvious to most of us, that our president has some form of dementia with his inability to put two words together and some of the fumbling and bumbling that he does. And I sort of am a believer of the Goldwater rule that came in effect when Barry Goldwater was running and they tried to destroy him, that unless you've had an opportunity to actually examine somebody and review their history and medical records, that you really ought to stay out of the way of making psychological or medical diagnoses from somebody that you don't really know. That being said, our narcissist in chief in here in California, you look at the way he behaves in such a narcissistic way. It's always about him. And then when something goes wrong, he defers the blame to somebody else. And I just couldn't imagine that we go from dementia to narcissist in Washington, D.C.
I mean, I think that if Newsom were to get the nomination on the Democrat side, it's perhaps the best thing that could possibly happen. I think it would be a landslide regardless of who the Republican nominee was at that point.
Your assumption, though, Kevin, is that people understand who Gavin Newsom is outside of California, and I'm not sure they do.
That's a good point, and that's part of what I think my responsibility is going to be. I think that in a general sense, I want to make sure that I'm conveying to Congress, to the rest of the country, exactly how dire things are in California. That was actually the topic of my speech at CPAC this weekend, was how California is not a model for the nation. As Newsom says, it's a warning to the nation. But if Newsom himself suddenly becomes sort of the instrument for trying to, you know, take California's failures national, then I would have to make that warning more specific about, you know, this particular person and what he individually has done to our state.
Yeah, congratulations on getting to speak at CPAC. What a cool honor.
It was exciting. A lot of energy there. Yeah, I mean, people are fired up and with good reason. I think it's going to be a good year.
And when you were there, were there any particular speeches that you enjoyed listening to?
I didn't catch a whole lot of the others because I was kind of in and out. As a speaker, I caught a few glimpses of President Trump's, and there were a handful of other people that I heard. Ted Cruz was there. I heard he gave a good speech, so it was a pretty good lineup.
Awesome. Did you get to meet President Trump?
I didn't see him at this thing. I guess he called my name out, but I wasn't there during his speech. Oh, okay. But I did meet him a couple months ago. I met with him for a little while before.
So listen, up in the assembly, you know, even though you're running in November, there's still some work to do. So there's a couple bills that are really nasty that they're still trying to shove down. One in particular, or two in particular. One is the ability of the medical board to go after physicians like me and Mark for doing exactly what we're doing here on a podcast, and that's speaking out against authority and saying things that they don't like, as they call it, disinformation and misinformation. And then the other is to allow little kids up to the age of 12 or 14 to consent to a medical procedure such as a COVID-19 vaccination. Any thoughts on those and where they are in the legislative process?
Well, sure. My thoughts are they're absolutely horrifying bills. When it comes to the medical board one, yeah, your podcast would probably be like their first target, right? It's like, we need to shut this down right away.
I might need a good attorney.
Yeah, exactly. So I am hopeful that we can stop that. I think it's been watered down a little bit, but it's still, truly a terrible bill with a insane premise that somehow it's the purview of the medical board to go and police the free speech of doctors if they don't hew exactly to the accepted orthodoxy that's been propagated by the government. It runs antithetical to everything that this country is supposed to be about. And then the vaccine one, they've now amended it to make it 15-year-olds, but, you know, obviously still does not fix the problem. We're talking about minors. It's a total affront to the rights of parents. And we're starting to hear stories, by the way, about schools that are giving kids, you know, gift cards, free pizza if they get vaccinated, or on the other hand, if they don't get it, they're excluded from prom, they can't play sports. So the combination of this bill and the pressure that some irresponsible officials in school districts are bringing to bear on kids is really a tremendous affront to principles of both parental rights and medical freedom.
I certainly know there's a lot of folks that are fighting against it, including Children's Health Defense that I'm proud to sit on here in California, and other activist groups that are up in Sacramento all the time trying to at least get abstentions from some of these more moderate, if that's actually a word, of the Democratic legislature. Do you think there's a good chance that we'll be able to kill those two bills in particular?
So I think there's quite a good chance that the student parental consent or the youth vaccine bill is not going to pass. It's been sitting on the assembly floor for several weeks now, and I don't think they have anywhere close to the votes. In the Senate, it passed by a single vote. 21 is the minimum votes you need for a bill to pass the Senate out of 40. They got 21 votes. That's really rare for a bill to pass, especially when it originates in the Senate. You have kind of a home court advantage if you're a senator who has a bill, getting your own bill out. So to only get his own bill out by one vote there shows that they're going to have a very hard time getting this through the assembly. I have less of a clear read on what's going to happen with the medical board bill. I think that there's been a lot of opposition to it, and I think it's been amended a few times now, but I don't have a great sense of where the votes are at.
It would seem to me if that thing passes, ultimately there'll be lawsuits because I'm not sure that they can abridge freedom of speech if they want to. It would seem to me that would be a constitutional problem, trying to go after doctor for his speech.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it'll inevitably be a court challenge, and I think that, there's a good chance it would succeed because this would be a federal issue. We could take it to federal court, and the Ninth Circuit's a little better these days. We have we've even gotten some halfway decent outcomes in court challenges lately. The state court system's another story. That's where, Mary and the Board of Education have been challenging the state of emergency, and that's going to state court. Hopefully, they'll get a good outcome, but unfortunately, you can't go to the federal courts because that's an issue of state law. This is an issue of federal law. So, I think that if this were to pass, you'd absolutely see a challenge and a very good chance of getting struck down, which is not to say that that's going to stop anyone in the legislature from passing it, because our legislature doesn't care. They pass unconstitutional bills all the time. And Gavin Newsom doesn't care. He does it all the time, too.
Kevin, it seems like this bill is really meant to just intimidate physicians. I mean, I've responded to now half a dozen medical board complaints filed against me in the last 12 months. I had one in 12 years until a month, Yeah. And the last one that I just responded to last month was specifically in response to an allegation of medical misinformation. And that's actually what term was used in the letter. And it referred to a post I placed on Twitter. So this is exactly what this this law is meant to stop, is physicians expressing their opinions, not to their patients, but actually publicly and on social media. And I've responded now twice to this allegation of spreading medical misinformation on Twitter, which was specifically that patients should receive adequate, immediate treatment and care if they get infected with the Wuhan virus, and that they should eschew masks and consider alternatives to this so-called vaccine. So once doctors are threatened, or you know hold one up as sort of an example in the state, that creates a silencing effect across the state. And it's going to take, you know, a year, two, 3 years before lawsuits propagate upwards and wind up, you know, overturning the rule. But in the meantime, you basically have this this intimidation effect. I think that's the goal.
Great point. Yeah, and that's, you know, the idea of a chilling effect is why restrictions on speech are so insidious. Is that you know, especially when we're talking about something that's of such value as your medical license that you've gone to, you know, years and years of schooling for, that is the basis of your ability to earn a living, and you tell someone, well, if you cross the line, that's going to be at risk. Well, people are going to feel like they have no choice but to not go anywhere near the line. And so suddenly you have, you know, all kinds of perspectives other than all perspectives other than the sort of state approved one that's removed from public discourse.
Exactly.
Kevin, tell us a little bit about how is your congressional race going?
It's going very well. So I'm running in what's now the third district. It's a huge district, covers 10 counties. I had a very good outcome in the primary, won the Republican nomination by over 55,000 votes, and I'm now facing a Democrat in the general election. It's a district that has a slight Republican lean to it, about a 5-point advantage when it comes to voter registration. So, you know, we kind of start with the upper hand in that sense, but the Democrats are targeting the district. They really don't want me to be in Congress. So we're preparing for a major battle the next few months.
Now, the guy you beat in the primary was a former sheriff and had pretty good name recognition. I assume now he has endorsed you?
He has, yep. He was he called me the next morning and offered his full support and was very gracious. And so, yeah, he's the
wonderful.
He's the outgoing sheriff of Sacramento County. He's been sheriff for the last 12 years.
So for our listeners that want to help out, you can go to electkevinkiley.com, electkevinkiley.com. Last name spelled K-I-L-E-Y. And it's going to be an exciting time, I think. I think we'll take some seats in California, no doubt. Across the nation, we're going to win back the House. And I think we have a decent time of taking back the Senate, which will be very exciting and set us up for a great run in 2024, whoever our candidate might be.
I believe you're correct. And I think that, you know, this has the potential to be a truly historic wave if things go well the next few months. You know, and it happens to coincide with redistricting, which is important because that means we have the potential to really realign, you know, American politics for a long time to come. But it isn't just about national elections. I think that we have the chance to really get much better representation at all levels of government, perhaps most importantly at the level of school boards, where you see all kinds of the parents who stepped up and became leaders in all of these fights the last 2 years. A lot of them are running for school boards themselves. And so I think that we have the chance to have like a much more pro-student orientation to to our whole education system come next year.
You know, up in Sacramento, we've also heard a lot about Barbara Ferrer. What can you tell us about her?
She is sort of just the embodiment of kind of everything that has been so wrong with the way government has conducted itself the last 2 years, right? She's the public health director of LA County. LA County has had the most draconian COVID measures perhaps of anywhere in the country. I mean, they'd take some order that Newsom puts out and then they'd go for extra credit. They'd like put it on steroids, right? So Newsom says no indoor dining. And they say, all right, well, we take your no indoor, we say no outdoor dining. So they announced a few weeks ago, well, we're going to go back to masks. We're going to have another mask mandate. Not even San Francisco is doing this, not even Alameda County. None of even the other sort of crazy counties are doing masks, but Barbara Ferrer is insistent that we're going to go back to masks. Apparently, one of the studies she's citing, her own daughter was an author of, so there's nepotism involved. And by the way, LA County has terrible COVID outcomes. When you compare it to Orange County, they've done much worse. When you compare it to Placer County, where I'm from, they've had like twice as many COVID deaths per capita as Placer has. So it's not like this is working in any sense of the word. And yet she decides that we need to have another mask mandate. But the outcry was so intense, coming from all quarters and even cities within LA County, liberal cities like Anaheim, or not Anaheim, but that's Orange County, Beverly Hills, and Manhattan Beach, Long Beach. These are like very liberal Democrat cities. They came out and said, if the county does another mask mandate, we're just going to ignore it. We're not going to follow it. So at the end of the day, Ferrer had to withdraw the mandate in order to save face.
Yeah, one silver lining. You know, it's funny, the left rarely looks at what works. They look at what feels good to them. And that's why we're seeing a lot of the outcomes that we're seeing. When you get to Congress, if you're given a choice, are there specific committees that you want to sit on?
I've been thinking about that. I mean, I try not to put the carriage, the horse ahead of the carriage too much. But I think that, you know, a committee like Judiciary would be an interesting one where I have a legal training, legal background, but you get to sort of deal with a lot of the naughtiest issues, not with a K, that is, not with the tired, you know, controversial issues that come through the Congress. I think that that would be a good place to be. I'd like to remain involved in education issues. A committee like financial services might be, a good one to be on at this time when we're dealing with a lot of issues related to the economy. So I've gotten a lot of, advice related to that. And of course, there's a whole process too you have to go through in order to get on your desired committee. I think there'll be some good opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark, what kind of investigations would you like to see done up in Congress when we take the House?
Well, I think we should go after all the local creeps like Swalwell and Brad Sherman and who are the others? It's a whole slew of people here in California that have basically just like taken over these committees in Washington as infiltrators, and they've completely wrecked the possibility of any sense of justice. Security committees, judicial committees. They're just siding with the enemy. The whole thing is a sham. It's almost like a sort of Soviet-style interrogation. And then with this, of course, recent passage of this truly Orwellianly named federal legislation called the Inflation Reduction Act, which is printing money, and the subsequent raid on Donald Trump's home, breaking into his safe to steal records from the former president. I really think that Americans at this point are of both sides really are kind of losing faith in the not the support of their party, but really faith in the honesty of government and the possibility of any sort of mildly corruption-free process.
There are several that I'd like to see. First of all, I'd like to see our three-letter healthcare agencies be investigated for some of the conflict of interest that they have. The fact that the FDA and the CDC, 50% of their funding comes from the industry that they're supposed to oversee. I'd like to hear more about that and figure out why that's happening and how to get rid of it. I'd like to see Anthony Fauci investigated for his malfeasance during not just COVID-19, but previously even during the AIDS crisis in the 80s. And I'd also like to see an investigation about what role taxpayers played in the gain-of-function research in the Wuhan virology lab and how that all came about. There is just so much that the Dems leave for legitimate investigations. And then, of course, let's actually do an investigation about January 6th and how that went down and why there weren't National Guards called out and why the Capitol Police were opening doors and why Ashley Babbitt was shot and there was no legitimate investigation done. On and on and on. We need to understand the truth and the truth of 2020 and what happened during the whole election shenanigans that was pointed out by that 2000 Mule movie and others. I mean, the American people deserve to know what actually happened and to investigate in a way that's legitimate. Let the Dems put their people on the panel like they did not allow us to be on the January 6th panel, except for, you know, Kinzinger and the soon-to-be unelected, what's her name, from Wyoming?
McCain.
So she's out, I thought, and good riddance, at least until she decides to try to run for president. So there's a lot of work that you all up in Congress are going to need to do, both on the House side and hopefully the Senate side as well. So hopefully, Kevin, you will represent California and continue to tweet. And by the way, I'm a little bit disappointed in your tweets. You haven't been banned or sanctioned on Twitter.
I know.
And you know, I don't understand what's going on. I even got banned temporarily on Twitter, and you're slacking.
Yeah, clearly I'm not nearly edgy enough. I need to take a page out of your book, Jeff.
We just read James Lindsay, of course, was just permanently banned from Twitter, and he's one of the most intelligent, edgy voices out there, and now his voice is gone, unfortunately.
It's just crazy that this would happen in this country. I mean,
I have a question for you, Kevin. This is something that I keep getting asked, and I don't have an answer to it, and I find it really troubling. And you have a legal background, obviously. You're in politics, and it's the following. We all know that there were shenanigans, to say the least, in the last federal, state, local elections 2 years ago. We have an upcoming midterm in November. A lot of people who support reform, who support conservative, libertarian, Republican candidates, they have said, and I think with good reason, the Democrat Party is already ahead in terms of population. They have larger numbers, so it's an uphill battle to beat them, because the opposing parties, specifically Republicans, are in the minority. And that's clear, that's objective, that's factual. However, in addition to that, since the misuse and sort of abrogation of really electoral process 2 years ago, initiated by Gavin Newsom and then, you know, melting down all the way to the local level, we have now in the state of California and other states, but certainly here in California, a permanent state of emergency, institutionalized mass vote by mail system, which requires the state and counties to mail out ballots to every single registered individual in the state. Anybody that's eligible to vote, even if they're dead, they're illegal, it doesn't matter. And with that system, it appears to a lot of people that it is simply not possible to win if you are not a Democrat candidate in the state of California under any circumstances. I would like to believe that that's not true. However, I do have a lot of sympathy with that argument, because in the last couple of elections, especially the recall election and now for the governor, and now currently ongoing, a vote count for the recall of LA County prosecutor, district attorney, George Gascon, there is now a lawsuit, or at least motions being filed. Judges are being pressured to allow for public viewing of the vote count for the recall, because there is no access to the recall count, and they have not, those who are counting the votes are not really providing any information. And it's a lot, you know, widely assumed that this is going to be a fraudulent recount, and that this man, George Gascon, will not actually be on the ballot to be considered for recall. So there's a lot of problems going on right now, like literally right now, with what I would consider sort of illegitimate voting processes that have been placed into law. What would you say to voters who really just feel kind of disheartened with the whole process and the possibility of electing, legitimately electing opposition candidates?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, they have been tilting the scales in their favor for a long time in California. And, you know, the most egregious examples, yeah, are the vote by mail that they've was supposed to be for COVID. Now it's permanent. You know, the ballot harvesting. But I could give you a dozen other examples that I've seen of laws that have passed in the past just in my time in the legislature that are designed to tilt the scales in their favor. In the recall, they moved the whole date of the election to give them a better shot at winning. Like they actually changed the date of the election in the middle of the auction. So yes, the concerns are very legitimate. What I tell people is this: number one, there are a lot of you know, people on the ground now who are keeping an eye on things, and even, you know, the example you gave, they're trying to make sure they have access to the signature verification process in LA County. But the second thing is, to the extent you feel we start from a disadvantage, that just means we need to work that much harder. You know, we actually had some really good outcomes in the primary. This year, we had good outcomes in San Francisco with the DA getting ousted, with three school board members getting ousted. And so, yeah, they're going to do whatever they can to try to hold back this wave, to try to stop it from happening. But I think that, you know, right now, we have the momentum that it'll take to overcome whatever they try to throw at us.
That's good to hear. That's great to hear. So Kevin, we've got listeners all over the country, actually all over the world. It's impressive, from Australia and Ireland and Mark, where were you recently?
Kosovo, Macedonia.
Did you drum up some listeners there for us?
Well, you know, like Brett Baer said at the Freedom of the Liberties and Independence Conference, whatever it was called, back in Colorado, when he transferred or transitioned the loyalty of a private driver back to the airport when he had to go and do some broadcasting during crisis. One viewer at a time. Convert them one viewer at a time. So I got at least one Kosovar, one Macedonian, and one Bosnian now listening to Informed Dissent. I guarantee you one in each of those three republics. And my next one is going to be Serbia. And then after that, I'm moving into Slovenia, and then I'm conquering Montenegro. So we've got at least six coming up by the end of the year. So things are going well for us.
I love you. So the point is, Kevin, we got listeners all over the place. What's your message to them? You know, obviously there's crisis around the world. People look to the United States and they see all kinds of crazy shenanigans going on here. What's your message to the freedom-loving people in our country and around the world to maintain hope, if you will?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, one thing that's worth emphasizing is that the stakes are really high right now, because, yeah, there are a lot of very concerning trends right now in this country and around the world. And the sort of authoritarian ethos that has been, to some extent, normalized by the COVID lockdown experience could lead to a whole different trajectory for this country and those around the world. But on the other hand, you know, that's not inevitable. I think that when you have the sort of collective trauma that we've all been through, it can also be an opportunity to swing the pendulum back the other way and to reverse really bad trends that had been building for some time, even before COVID. And so that's what I think the sort of choices that we face right now, and I think that's true in many places across the country. Are we going to sort of just accept this as the new normal, or are we going to use it as an opportunity to return to our founding principles and to sort of redefine what it means to be a free people again?
Absolutely. Well, I understand you're going to be down in Orange County this week. And Tiger and Winston look forward to hopefully seeing you again. And safe travels. And we really appreciate you coming on Informed Dissent. And look forward to seeing you again soon.
All right. My pleasure. Thanks for what you guys are doing.
You've been listening to Informed Dissent with Dr. Jeff Barkey, board-certified primary care physician, and Dr. Mark McDonald, board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist. Informed Dissent, the intersection of healthcare and politics.